Shane, I need to warn you, my desk is swarming with ants today. We had some nice weather, so obviously the bugs came out to play. So if you see me like throwing stuff across
elbows.
Yeah, throwing elbows.
If I see you do an atomic elbow drop on an ant.
That's why.
You see, in Colorado, we call them aunts.
Hello and welcome to episode 266 of The Dive Down, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike. My name is Stanislav, here in Chicago, and with me on the line from Denver, Colorado, it's the one and only Shane Beeps. Shane, Hollywood's biggest night.
I didn't even look at what won. Which is funny because I feel like I've been more engaged with cinema in like the past year than I have in forever. And I could not have cared less about what won the Academy Awards.
Also with us is the streamer, currently known as Doomwake.
Zero response.
Devin O'Donnell. Devin, Hollywood's biggest night. Yay or nay?
I don't think I watched a single movie last year, so I got nothing for you.
I did really like mostly nude John Cena, I do have to say.
Doom, you didn't even watch the Metallica documentary that Dave kept begging you to see?
No, I meant new movies. You know, obviously the Metallica documentary from the 2000s is not going to win an Oscar in 2024.
It should have.
You never know.
It should have. No, I mean, I saw John Cena. That dude's got good comedic timing.
He's funny.
He's very good. I want a movie with him and Gosling.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it weird that he has zero hair on his body though?
I mean, it's probably purposeful.
Where'd it go?
Well, for that bit, it was probably on purpose, right?
It was all behind the card.
God.
What do you think he does with it? Do you think he donates it to Make-A-Wish Kids?
Here's hoping. Speaking of donating things to Make-A-Wish, you know what you can buy for your friends who are wishing for new card gaming accessories brands that'll improve their gameplay and their game day? We've got Heavy Play. Ooh. Heavy Play, our now longtime sponsor, and I see. Oh, Violent Outbursts in the Heavy Play sleeves, Devin. I'm sorry that you have to remove them from their lovely encasement. They have play mats, they have deck boxes, they have card sleeves, the enhanced ergonomics, the enhanced mobility, the enhanced protection. We are legitimately users of Heavy Play products. We love Heavy Play products and we're happy to rep them.
You know what I love about Heavy Play?
Go on.
The accessories, they are not going to get banned for
no, they're not.
For obtuse reasons.
Competitive advantage.
Well, cards that you put in the sleeves could get banned.
Yeah, yes. but the EquipMag system is here to stay.
Yes, you magnetically attach, bundle, and carry ABCs, all of your stuff, together. It does give you a competitive advantage, but it cannot be banned because it doesn't make you play better. I know from experience, but you can get this stuff at your LGS, perhaps. You can get it at heavyplay.com. And if you do go there, use our code THEDIVEDOWN2024. In numbers for 10% off of your first order. That 10% is also numbers. It makes your order only 90%. Do the math. Sega does what Nintendo don't.
Show blood in Mortal Kombat 1.
Oh yeah, not that green stuff.
It's like the Nickelodeon slime.
I don't think it was green stuff in Mortal Kombat. It was like sweat. It was gray.
Well, they definitely had. There's definitely like green blood.
That was just on Reptile. That was just on the Reptile secret mini boss.
Stanislav, I only played Mortal Kombat 1 on my Game Boy. And let me tell you what, that was a sweet port.
Wild. Yeah,
it was sick.
I think I still have my original Super Nintendo copy of it in a crawl space somewhere.
Sell that cartridge. I'm sure it's for thousands.
Mm.
So we're talking about Balatro today, right?
We are. I would love to talk Balatro. I finally have become Balatro pilled.
Yes.
And here's the important thing. Here's what is interesting that I realized through the help of friends is that Balatro is just draft.
Yes. Poker okay? draft.
Balatro is just draft. So like that's why I think it makes sense for Magic players like us to be into it, because it's just draft. You're just drafting an archetype. So we can talk more about that later. Stanislav, what are we doing this week? Let me. I have one or two guesses.
Well,
I think our listeners probably do as well.
I'll tell you what we do. Let me know if it lines up with your expectations.
Okay.
On this week's show, we mourn and or rejoice the latest B&R announcement.
Sad rhino noises.
We panic or celebrate over the future state of Modern. And finally, we decry or congratulate Magic the Gathering as a game as a whole.
I don't know about that last part.
This seems all-encompassing. This seems like it's got something for everyone.
Yeah. Before all that, though, we should housekeep because a couple new patrons have joined the Dive Down Nation. Ethan C., Cameron M., thank you. Thank you for your support. If you would like to join the Dive Down Nation, you can do that over at patreon.com/thedivedown. As little as $1 an episode. Maybe you're from a country that doesn't use dollars. You can pay in euro. You can pay in Canadian dollars.
Pesos.
Pesos. We'll take them. Really, we'll take anything at patreon.com/thedivedown. Get into the Discord. Chat about B&R announcements. Talk about Bellatro. Talk about Hollywood's biggest night.
Talk about John Cena.
Yeah. Yeah, I set up a John Cena channel on the server. I never leave.
I didn't get the invite to that one.
No, I'm in there by myself.
It's a private thread.
Yeah, no one wants to see what I'm up to in there. You can also support us over at thedivedown.com/store. Pick up some Dive Down swag.
We got some Rhino Boys t-shirts that are not on sale, but you want one more than ever now.
Maybe they should be. Maybe we should do like
a clearance.
Dave's got to clear that space in his garage.
You know what's nuts? Today's is 3/11. Amber is the color of your energy.
Whoa.
Not like this. You can support us while playing Magic the Gathering with new or old cards at Mana Traders.
Mm-hmm.
If you use promo code thedivedown_OUF, oof, thedivedownoof, through the end of March, you can get 10% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards.
That's how I'm feeling today is oof.
Big yeah. Oof.
And if you're hearing this after March, just check the show notes of the most recent episode to get the latest promo code for that.
It won't be in this episode. Like, if you're listening to this after March, okay, mm-hmm. and you look at these show notes, it'll still say the dive_OUF. It's not going to dynamically change. That'd be cool.
Oh, I thought our show notes were dynamic.
No. Okay. This is a fast intro.
Yeah.
We're only at 9 minutes because we're rushing to this section.
Yes.
You got to rip the Band-Aid off.
Violent Out versus Vand.
No.
So, okay.
Are we surprised?
Yes.
Honestly, I'm honestly surprised.
I'm surprised.
I'm surprised, Jerry. I'm a surprised guy. I'm a surprised talker. But Stanislav.
Stanislav.
What are the hot headlines that came out of this? We've got nothing standard, nothing, no changes in standard, no changes in Pioneer, no changes in Legacy, no changes in Explorer, no changes in Pauper,
no changes in Limited, no changes in CEDH.
Yeah.
No Penny changes Dreadful. In Kamigawa Block Constructed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But we do have Vintage Ponder is unrestricted. Okay, cool. For my Ponder play.
Small note about that. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but they actually released it with a typo where it says Ponder was unbanned and people made a fuss about it on Twitter. It was pretty funny, but
those dastardly writers. But yeah, a Magic player is making a fuss about something being wrong. The way this $20 bill is folded in my pack. That's weird. Anyway, okay. So we have Violent Outburst banned and Ponder unrestricted. Those are our two things. So now we'll talk for 20 minutes about Ponder being unrestricted before we get into the Violent Outburst part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm in.
I lied.
So should we maybe be transparent about our biases? Like, anyone who listens to the Dive Down knows that the three of us have experience with rhinos, and I think we have liked the deck to different extents over the years.
I mean, Devin is on a new rhino token from Cool Stuff Inc.
Yeah, that's that one's gonna go over well, huh?
Yeah,
I mean, I think maybe a little bit of a spoiler, but I think there's a lot still going on for this deck.
There is,
right?
Yeah,
hopefully.
I
mean,
I've basically only played rhinos for the past 2 years. It's the only deck that I've owned, it's the only deck I've interacted with. So,
even in Pioneer, yeah. It's not legal.
Well, yeah.
But I've tried.
Yeah. I guess I just want to be like transparent, but also like be honest. Like, we are Magic players with biases and preferences. It just so happens that this time around, the ban impacted a deck that we like. I don't want to speak for everyone, but I really liked this deck for a long time.
Yeah, deck great.
And so, like, maybe our reaction to it might not align with all of our listeners. We'll try to be fair and balanced in our discussion, but, like, we're human, and that's going to color this conversation to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we all have some pretty rational, you know, we're past maybe the despair, the surprise part. We're into the acceptance and growing and learning.
I'm still bargaining.
Oh, yeah, bargaining. Yes, that part. Yes, if I give you Ardent Plea, can I have Violent Operas back?
Yeah.
I'll give you 4 Cascade spells to take Violent Operas back.
If I give you Demonic Dread and Ardent Plea, can I have 3?
Bloodbraid Elf, too. I don't need that.
Yes. Can I just get... I just need 3 Violent Operas.
Bloodbraid Elf was banned at one point, so...
That's right.
That's a good point.
So, this time around, the Modern announcement was actually pretty short and to the point. So, I'm thinking... Let's go through it together. Let's just read it. We'll discuss it. We'll add some color commentary along the way. And then after we go through the whole announcement, we'll discuss it in more broad strokes.
Sure, please.
So Dan Muser, who is the... Dan's actual job title is the manager of the competitive play design team, writes...
Violent Operas is banned. In our previous Modern update, we removed Fury and Up the Beanstalk from the environment. Doing so has returned Rakdos midrange to an acceptable level without deleting it from the metagame entirely. Shane's note, I didn't know Up the Beanstalk was in Rakdos midrange. Moving on. Since then, we've seen Temur Rhinos, Living End, Golgari Yawgmoth, Amulet Titan, and Izzet Murktide rise in metagame share. Cool. That's Shane's note. More recently, players have had some success with Leyline of the Guild Pack from Murders at Karlov Manor in Domain Zoo and Rhino's variants featuring Scion of Draco and Leyline Binding.
So
these are true statements.
In general, it's all basically factually correct. Like, maybe we can dither a little bit about, like, is Scam at an acceptable level now because it's hardly played and for more than like 3 or 4% of the metagame, I suppose.
I think to a lot of people, that's an acceptable level of grief being played. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like,
if you ask somebody, you know, 3 months ago, the person who was getting double grief, what would be an acceptable level for Scam? They would be like, I never want to play against this deck for the rest of my life. So
please delete it from the metagame.
Yeah.
And so getting it down to where it is probably like acceptable to many people. It's not acceptable to Dave. I mean, like, I was thinking when you were giving your preamble earlier, Stanislav, about like, hey, you know, we like Rhinos. We might have some feels about this. Like, you know, Dave really likes Scam. I actually thought Scam was a blast to play, right? Like, I was not happy to have it kind of, you know, nerfed a bit. But
yeah,
I think, you know, those are things that have to happen.
Yeah. I also really like how they describe that the Rhinos deck has picked up Leyline of the Guild Pack to some success.
Yeah, some success. I mean, I think that's probably fair. I mean, it's funny. Well, okay, this is me giving a little bit of pre-negativity here, but like, notice that there's not a single number mentioned in this entire article besides the year 2008, mm-hmm. I believe, and maybe March 12th. Mm-hmm. Those are numbers that are in this article, but there are no other numbers. Okay. There's no win rates.
Nope.
There's no representation rates. There's no matchup spreads.
Right.
This is just words.
And the next words are, over the past regional championship season, Temur Rhinos has begun to approach previous levels of Rakdos midrange metagame dominance. So this is where the announcement starts to get kind of weird to me. And maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but...
Stan's note. This is not what Dan wrote.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
A little bit.
The Modern RC season, which is what I think they are referring to, was ages ago. And we've had like regional championships since then. We've had regional championships, or we've had a Pro Tour in a whole other format. I feel like Modern metagame is kind of strictly a Magic Online experience right now. And when the RC season was in full swing, that metagame was still primarily dominated by Scam and yes. 4-color.
Yep.
Ridiculously so. It was like 25% of the room was like Scam.
Yeah, the only thing, I found this, I don't know if you guys know that. Did you know there was a Modern RC this past weekend? Did you guys know that?
feel like I should have known that, okay. But I did not.
Well, there was. It was in Southeast Asia. I don't really... like, the schedule is so weird to me, because I don't know if this was... like, I don't even know what season this is from. Because we, like you said, we were already done with the modern RCs. I think we've even had a Pioneer RC since then, and now we have another modern one for, I think, a Pro Tour that's in, like, 4 weeks or something, or 6 weeks. Anyways, you know, if there's any sort of data regarding RCs and rhinos, maybe this is something they looked at. But to give you, you know, listeners at home an idea, if you combine Teamer and Domain rhinos, it was the most played deck, but still only, it's, I mean, 16%, which is, I guess, what we would come to expect as far as rhinos is concerned over the events that we've covered, you know, in the past few months or so, since it's, you know, picked up in popularity since the December ban list announcement. But yeah, that's really all I could find. And you know, just again, I don't know why this RC is just randomly here, but you know, here it is.
Yeah, so I think that's a good call out, Stan, right? Which is just, yeah, like, you know, what is the time frame we're actually talking about that you're looking at, besides like recently? You can just say recently. You don't have to like give us some kind of regional championship season clause here, you know what I mean?
They could, but they didn't, and at this point, maybe they never will. But the article goes on. While we want to preserve the Cascade strategies as viable options in Modern, okay, we'd like to remove one of the more powerful aspects of their strategy. I wonder why. Namely, the ability to Cascade into a payoff card at instant speed. Okay. Casting Violent Outburst during an opponent's turn reduces a lot of the risk inherent in such a strategy. It allows the Cascade player to untap with all their mana open and Rhino tokens or cycling creatures ready to attack. Both decks also include Force of Negation, which costs 0 mana on opponent's turns. Oh, enabling a streamlined defense of the combo.
Hold on, you can cast it for 0 mana? I've always been waiting for to have 6 of.
Surely there must be a catch.
So, okay, so here's an interesting thing, right? Is I think it's interesting that the article focuses on the reduction of risk inherent in the Cascade strategies rather than say how much it puts the opponent on the back foot having to like play around the existence of instant speed Cascade. Because like that's the thing that I feel like I would point to here, right? And I will point to it later when we talk about it, right? Which is just like, it reduces a lot of the risk. And I can only think that means that like the risk being Counterspell, and then if you have Force of Negation and a blue pitch card, then like that removes like the element of risk that you might have walked into there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm probably going to lose a lot of you here, but have you ever considered this being a Splinter Twin situation? This was actually a point that Aspiring Spike brought up on stream today, where it's like, you kind of put your opponent in this unenviable position of you have 3 mana up, that could mean, you know, 7 different spells, and yeah, if they don't want to play into your interaction and they say go, well, you can still use your mana to apply pressure,
yeah,
and you put them in the same spot next turn, and that is, you know, I think as far as Cascade is concerned, forcing people to do it at sorcery speed rather is, you know, a little bit, it kind of in their eyes, and I think I do agree with this, it kind of takes the deck down a notch in terms of power level.
For sure.
Clearly. I will, the one thing I will say about the way this argument, however, is structured, is that the last piece on Force of Negation could be used in defense of a Force of Negation ban too, of using this as an explanation of like, the Cascade player can still tap out and hold up interaction because of the free spell. Like, does that mean that tapping out is the problem or that free spells are a problem? And I think that kind of harkens, yep, back to what we discussed last week, where it's just like, you're damned if you do or you're damned if you don't.
Yes. And like, there's some other cards I want to get into when we get more in the weeds on this that, you know, go along with Force of Negation as kind of like, you know, the whole kit of parts that has like come to be in a deck like, you know, Rhinos or like Living End, like all of the options that we have at hand now are, you know, really what pushes these decks into perhaps too high a power level. But I do want to focus, you know, again, let's get through this article so we could then start giving some takes, right? But
yeah,
you know, ultimately it's just like, so what are we taking away from this paragraph? That the Rakdos mid-range metagame dominance level, which is kind of undeterminable, is beginning to approach that, is like when we have to start worrying about something being banned. What does metagame dominance mean? Does it mean presence? Does it mean win rate? Does it mean level of annoyance? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing for us to go off of here, which is like another one of the things that has frustrated me about the last two announcements. Not to pile on Dan Musser here, or Musser, is just like Dan wrote the last one. I found it similarly shallow, similarly lacking real relevant information for us to act on as like a, as gamers, as modern players. Like, so we could be like, okay, well, what do we need to look for? Like, where we start getting worried. Yes. And we still don't really have real answers here.
Let's finish reading the announcement. There's a little bit left here.
Two sentences.
Yeah. To wrap it up, Dan writes, removing violent outbursts from the format will necessitate Cascade players to adopt Ardent Plea or Demonic Dread. Are we really expecting Demonic Dread to make a comeback? I doubt it.
Hey, Living End players did it before. Will they do it again? Who knows?
I find that unlikely personally. There's also other Cascade spells like Bloodbraid Elf for one, but...
Seems Demonic Dread pitches the grief, you know? Just throwing that out there.
And Fury, oh wait.
Yeah, maybe we should put Grief and Dread into our Rhino decks. That's what the people want. And then finally, adopting Ardent Plea or Demonic Dread, forcing the Cascade players to play them on their own turn more often, weakening both Cascade strategies and reducing them to an acceptable level of metagame share, much like the Fury ban did to Rakdos midrange. By the way, the Fury ban also hit Rhinos.
Sure. I mean, there's an argument, you know, that it was already becoming like a flex card. Yeah.
So one thing I want to say about that very last part there, that much like the Fury ban did to Rakdos midrange, the Fury ban killed Rakdos midrange. Like, we, you know what I mean? It literally killed the deck. People tried it a little bit. It wasn't nearly as good. I don't think that that's their intention with the outburst ban. And I also, you know, we can talk about this in a little bit. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case with Rhinos. But do they, you know, if they want what happened to Rakdos to happen to Rhinos, then nobody's going to cast Crashing Footfalls ever again for the rest of our lives, you know?
Yeah.
But we don't really know what they want based on this announcement. Right? Like,
this is a whack-a-mole announcement.
Yeah.
Which is why it's frustrating, which is why I think people have like a negative outlook on it. And, you know, this kind of gets to my point earlier, which is just like, I think this announcement is bad. I don't think the card being banned, like whether or not it was Violent Outburst being banned or not, like it could be any other card, but like if it's rationalized like this, if it's explained in the sense, like, you know, people have been building around like a Cascade strategy involving Violent Outburst specifically for years now, right? It's, you know, the addition of Shardless, of course, with Modern Horizons 2 pushed the Cascade decks into a much more of a legitimate place in the metagame, but like I don't really understand how you could, you know, gut two decks more or less from Modern, a hugely popular format, two quite popular decks, the most popular deck in the format that people have been playing for a long time, right? This isn't like some crazy up-and-comer that's just like, oh, this is too good, we got to get rid of it. It's not like, you know, people have been building their identity around Tybalt or something like that. You know what I mean? So this is like a legitimate player in the metagame. And it's been part of the fabric of the format for a long time. And you give us a word count of 257 words.
257 words is half a page single spaced.
Yes. It is a pittance. It is not an effort. This is not an effort to explain a decision like this. What I said to you, Stan, in the admin chat was like, this reads like something that was written as a draft and said, hey, can you flesh this out a bit? And then no one ever did anything to it.
Well, your point reminds me of the last BNR that had no changes in all formats was also pretty negatively received. And they said after the fact that we're not doing that anymore. We're going to give more insight into how we're thinking about formats. And this announcement in particular, I think more so even than the Fury Beans announcement, this just feels like we're just going to do the bare minimum to explain why we're banning
something. This is the bare minimum.
But not really, in my personal opinion, not really like doing the due diligence to like highlight all the different factors that they're thinking about and how they actually came to this conclusion.
I don't think it's dangerous to do so.
No.
Like, do you know what I mean? No. Like, it's not like putting something, okay, the people reading this, the people that care about Modern and Legacy and whatever, any of these competitive formats, the people that are going to click this article and read it and care about it are going to be the kind of people that you want to sort of confirm your stewardship of the format, right? Like, hey, we think you are understanding what we're doing. You're understanding what we're playing. You're understanding what we're seeing and feeling and doing. And to back that up, you're going to give us some data more than approaching metagame like dominance, right? And I'm not expecting like a grid of like matchup things, but even in previous years and previous announcements, they've said things like, you know, only one bad matchup, or, you know, it's no bad matchups across the top eight most competitive decks on Magic Online, right? Like, you don't have to tell me 54% is too much. We kind of know that it's too much, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know what the arbitrary sort of, somewhat arbitrary sort of danger zones are, because we've seen it happen time and time again, right? But then, like, when you're providing your rationale, then there's more that you can do than just basically saying, like, approaching metagame dominance. And, like, and then your brief thoughts on how acting at sorcery speed instead of instant speed would be enough to, you know, nerf these back down into something that's more acceptable. And it also, like, there's no conversation about the ecosystem which Modern operates, right? Like, you know, you're not saying, like, they have said in the past, we know that the, you know, the, when they've maybe done a double ban, or something like that. Like, when they said, like, we know that if we make this ban, then this next thing is going to be ridiculous. So we're also going to take care of something out of that. And it just shows that there's like an understanding and a thought process using the huge amount of data that they have access to, as well as their player experience internally, to say, we are thoughtfully approaching this format, as opposed to 257 words.
I'm gonna throw something out to you guys, and I'm gonna be real with you. It kind of feels like to me, and I kind of mentioned this earlier a little bit, where the Ponder thing, they mistyped Ponder was, you know, unbanned instead of unrestricted. I don't know if you guys caught this in when the announcement was initially released, but
is it Phoenix thing?
Yeah, is it Phoenix as well? So there was multiple different typos in the announcement, and I kind of almost think at this point, now we had talked about a little bit about, I want to say we touched on this last week with some, you know, people, there was some posts on Twitter where people had discussed, you know, what do you think is going to happen? And I think the common consensus, or at least a lot of people that I saw, a lot of people did kind of think that Outburst was going to get the axe. So it almost feels like to me that this was rushed, in the sense of they were planning on doing nothing. They saw a lot of people posting on Twitter what their predictions were. A lot of people thought Outburst was going to get banned, and they're like, okay, well, let's just get it over with. A lot of people expect it. We're just going to do it. And then we're going to give up, you know, some 257 words on that. So it kind of feels like that to me, honestly.
Yeah. But okay. Let's say Devin, you know, you, Stan, myself, anyone, you know, even most people who are like invested in the format and also like writing, like if you were given a 1 hour assignment to, you know, 1 hour heads up to say, write why you banned Violent Outburst, you could do a lot more than this.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Like, come up with, you some know, numbers.
Yeah, you could write even if you were given the charge, you can say nothing about numbers. You can say nothing about matchups. You could at least give a more deeper rationale, a deeper explanation, and seem more thoughtful and understanding of the format and community to make people feel more at ease and more satisfied with the explanation.
I'm going to try to like put a bow on this section of the conversation of what I think we're ultimately talking about here, which is when the rationale for a pretty significant ban feels like rushed and arbitrary and doesn't necessarily feel like it's in line with the spirit of, you know, previous bans over the last few years within this format, it makes it hard to understand what is the criteria by which they are curating this format and what their vision is for it. And I think that then becomes a problem for not just consumer confidence of like buying cards and potentially buying expensive cards that go into a deck where Violent Outburst is played, but in competitive confidence of like, why invest in a strategy that I can't necessarily like play over a long enough period of time if they could ban it for a host of different reasons that seem to be a moving target based on like no clear pattern or clear communication of what they care about it in any given time with the format.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Sam. And like, you know, we were talking about this too. It's like, we have a lot of fancy cards in our Rhinos deck, right? And like I said it somewhat sarcastically, and you're responding to like you saying like, yeah, I had such a nice Rhinos deck. It's like, why am I not just playing like MP copies of like, you know, basic forests and like, you know, a bunch of cards? Because it's like, no one's going to care, including myself, about my, like my nice version of Rhinos that I played for like a year, after it's gone. Right. And I know that they are, I'm not beholden, you know, WotC is not beholden to me or anybody to like make a deck playable forever. And again, we still get to talk about the fun stuff with where's Rhinos going from here. Right. But I think a lot of people have had decks that are essentially completely eliminated, right? More or less. And they're, you know, Jason in our Discord, he's had a number of like fully foiled out decks, like sort of effectively become unplayable. And then again, that's his choice. He would admit that. But I think ultimately what I'm getting at is the confidence thing, which is like, why am I going to go spend 10 more, $15 more for a cool version of a card? When honestly, I'm not going to get that value out of it, whether it's like the amount I actually play it in paper, the good feels it gives me, when honestly, you know, so many decks have come and gone, whether it's by metagame forces or by bans, to keep it moving along or to keep it something that I'm going to be playing. So, you know, I think that's something that they have to be careful about too, right? Like, why are people going to bling out decks? Why are people going to buy the fancy versions?
Yeah, I think just kind of wrapping up on this one last thing real quick before we, you know, move on to what happens to Rhinos next. You know, when Modern first came out, they were very adamant that it was going to be a turn four format, and these are the parameters that we're going to be setting, and these are the, you know, the topics of which we're going to be banning around. And as I understand, as Modern gets power crept and everything gets more powerful along the way, maybe those kind of terms of engagement aren't necessarily the same as they were before, but it would just be nice to have some sort of like the State of Modern article where they talk about, this is what we want from the format, these are the win rates that we find problematic, and, you know, so on and so forth, and these are the metagame shares that we want to address. And, you know, it just kind of feels like you guys said, we just don't have that, you know.
And I thought that is what they essentially promised after their last no changes in all formats post, like that they were going to start offering that. And as of now, I just don't feel like they're holding up that end of the bargain. And maybe we would feel differently and the tone would be a little different if they could offer a little bit more insight. And we're recording this on the Monday immediately after the announcement. Maybe that insight's going to come tomorrow during Blake's stream, because I believe they are discussing the BNR then.
Yeah, it could look stupid tomorrow with all my complaints. But still, you know, yeah. people don't
we'll
have
still to, air the episode.
Yeah, like, well, like, why, you know, why do I have to read an article and then watch like an hour-long stream? You know what I mean? Like, that's not a necessary thing to have to do. Okay, I've complained enough. You all have tempered my complaints a bit. But I think let's talk about this ban. Let's actually talk about Violent Outburst being banned. How does it make us feel? Do we think it was a legitimate, reasonable banning for the format? That kind of stuff. Stan, I think that I'm going to look at you. I think you are, you know, the standard bearer, the banner carrier, most of the pod on Rhinos. I know, and then Demon's right there with you.
Yeah.
So, like, how are you feeling? Like, what is your initial reaction to this?
I mean, I'm sad because it's a card I've loved to cast. I think you actually said it really best, that this is a card that people have wanted a good Violent Outburst Cascade deck for a long time, and they finally got that with Shardless. And I do worry that, like, maybe they are trying to take down Cascade as a mechanic more than just, like, Rhinos the deck, especially because I think a lot of the thought now is that Rhinos can endure, but Living End possibly cannot. And time will tell, and hopefully Living End can endure. I think that would be for the best. But Violent Outburst is not just the single card in a single deck. It's, you know, it's sort of become a pillar of the format, and they've hobbled that pillar now. And the last time that comes to mind, or at least one time that comes to mind where they did that, is when they banned Faithless Looting. They also gave us back Stoneforge Mystic. So the format was rebalanced. And here it just feels like they're possibly just shrinking the format rather than like giving us new things to explore and play with. I worry that with Violent Outburst gone, we're actually going to find fewer things to do rather than more things.
Yeah, the shrink before the MH3 expand, basically.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, like, I mean, what you said about Cascade is like, you know, like fundamentally, I think Cascade is kind of dumb, right? Like, it's a really funny avoidance of the rules of suspend. And they sort of leaned into that over the years. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they gave us Footfalls and MH1 kind of as a lark, I think, honestly. And then, like, Shardless and MH2 really kind of cemented these Cascade decks as legitimate. And, you know, if Cascade is kind of dumb, then Cascade at instant speed is even dumber. And, like, look, I think, like, if you can cast a 3-mana spell at the end of your opponent's turn and untap with, like, 8 to 38 if you're playing Living End, like, power on the board, that is kind of bonkers. Yes, I agree. But Modern does bonkers things. I don't think it's necessarily more bonkers than anything else. But, I mean, like, to me, like, Violent Outburst is it's like every ban in Modern, which is like a casualty of everything else that exists around it, right? Or most bans in Modern, like, unless it's a broken card. Like, the existence of cards like Baseju or like Force of Vigor make things like Hate Artifacts less of a lockdown threat. Like Force of Negation, it got mentioned in the ban announcement. It's this potentially free protection for your end of turn outburst. Like, Rhinos and Living End have all these tools at hand to not only present the threats, but like to counteract what the opponent's trying to do to stop it. But a lot of decks have that, right? But maybe it's just the fact that because they can be these multicolor decks now, because they have the tools at hand to even work around the Cascade issues with some of the like split cards or all of the weird like cost reduction techniques that they've built into these cards now, where they say 5 on the upper right, but they really cost, you know, 0 or 1 or something like that, right? So you add enough of these to a format, and then you get to the point where a Violent Outburst at the end of your opponent's turn is insane. It's bonkers, right? And so, like, it's the most convenient ban, and it hits a much narrower selection of decks than, like, a Boseiju ban, which, in my opinion, is an absurd card. Like, truly absurd. Like, when you play with Boseiju, you're just like, wow, this card is great every time. Yeah. But, you know, Boseiju has like a wider utility for a bunch of decks. Force of Vigor has a bunch of utility for, you know, many decks. So it's like, it makes sense to say like, hey, this is the most outstanding example we have of too much stuff contributing to the whole. And, you know, fundamentally, like, this card's banned because it's instant speed. It created too much false tempo, as we talked about, right? And so it's like, it makes sense that it's gone. But It's not in itself a messed up card. It's sort of just where we've gotten to in Modern, right?
It's the card pool.
Yeah, it's the card pool.
So I got a question for you guys. On that note, like, hypothetically, if you just took the standard format and you put exactly Violent Outburst and Crashing Footfalls into the standard format, does that, like, is that deck even playable without any of the, like, the Dead Gons, the Leyland Bindings, the Fire Aces? Like, isn't that what makes that, like, why the reason that the deck is so good is because it is able to play the cheap interaction while also, you know, being able to apply that pressure, right?
Yes. I mean, you do have, like, the whole package that they banned out of Pioneer with, Geologist?
Geological Appraiser? Yeah, I guess you have those split cards, yeah.
Yeah, you have, like, bad split cards. But we had Footfalls. We had Footfalls and Violent Outburst and Force of Negation and Dead Gone and like a lot of the Cascade cards before Shardless Agent was printed. And I bet the deck would have still been okay even if Fire and Ice wasn't there. Like, Fire and Ice is spectacular, but like it's just flexible interaction ultimately. So I don't know. I feel like you kind of need the rule of 8 of Cascade to make Crashing Footfalls the card viable.
Right. Yeah. And that's
having
the point. Yeah,
having the interaction around it kind of just helps put the room together.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, I keep wondering if, like, are we getting to a point where, so you, I'm sure you guys remember when they changed the Cascade rule back when people were cascading into Tibalt and Valky and that whole absolute nonsense, that dumpster fire happened, yeah. The worst 2 weeks of everybody's lives.
Or the most exciting 2 weeks in Modern history.
Depending on who you ask. And I'm wondering if we're getting to a point where it's like, And I don't know if this is necessary. Obviously, it's not the fault of Fire Ace and Dead Gone and cards like that. But I'm wondering if, you know, I hate to even bring this thought up, but do we get to a point where we have to say, like, if you cascade and you go past a card that, like, a split card, I'm talking Dead Gone Fire Ace, if you go past a card that can be cast for less than 3 mana, you are forced to cast that. You know what I mean?
And cost reduction no longer applies type
right,
stuff.
Exactly. Or, like, it doesn't check the total mana value, it checks either half of it, and that would, you know, and I heard some people saying that on Twitter. I don't know if I would like that more than the Violent Outburst ban, but, I mean, just something, some food for thought, something to think about.
Yeah, I wonder if that makes Cascade cards actually just kind of unplayable, or or just a wildly different strategy that has to operate on a whole other axis, and then you get to possibly play that like weird 2-mana Cascader from MH2 that needs Delirium to Cascade.
Yeah. But as far as my initial reaction is concerned, first of all, I'm looking at the document here and you put me in the neutral camp. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. Is that a good thing? I just wasn't sure.
After last week, I wasn't sure if you liked Violent Outburst or not, so I figured I'd split the difference.
Oh, okay. All right. Honestly,
where do you stand?
So it's funny, when I opened up the page and I scrolled down a little bit and I, you know, first saw Violent Outburst was banned, I was kind of like, okay. Because I honestly, and I mentioned this last week, I kind of assumed this was going to happen, you know? And a lot of people on Twitter kind of posted that as well, where they maybe they didn't recognize that Violent Outburst was the problem, but it was the common consensus among people who were posting on Twitter that, you know, what is your main complaint with Modern? And that whole article, the whole episode we did last week on, you know, why do you not like Modern? And I think a lot of responses were instant speed with, you know, Force Negation backup. And we could talk about, is that the Force's problem? Is that Outburst problem? But at the end of the day, you know, I kind of expected this to happen. And, you know, this might be a bit of a scolding hot lava molten take, but I kind of think that Rhinos maybe got a little bit better.
I mean, your mouth to God's ears.
All right,
Devin.
Hear me out, okay? So what was, if you go back last week, what was Rhino's worst matchup?
Living End.
Yes.
Gone. I think Living End in its current form is basically stone cold unplayable.
Sad.
And the reason for that is because it's much more important to be able to Wrath of God on your opponent's turn than Wrath of God on your turn. Like when they can't play around it, they have to like animate their creature land or play their haste creature. There's not really a lot of like fallback that they can do, which would normally play around a sorcery speed Wrath. Right? Or the draw phase grief, where you have a grief in your graveyard and you draw phase Violent Outburst, grief you, and whatever. So Living End takes a massive hit to the point where I think it's almost unplayable. Yawgmoth and Titan, which people are thinking are going to get a huge buff, are both incredibly good matchups for Rhinos. I've been beating up on those decks for years. So if you take out the worst matchup and you take two good matchups and put those more towards the front of the format, there you go. So, and I honestly think that the domain version was kind of better anyways. So if people are going to be forced to play Ardenplea, I guess if you're going to make me play it, then that's fine because we get to play Binding, the Leyline package. And then on top of all of that, Ardenplea is a white card that pitches to Solitude. So you could even consider playing Solitude because you also have Leyline of the Guild pack to pitch to it too. Which, you know, maybe that fixes more bad matchups.
Another blue card for Solitude, excuse me, for Subtlety, which Violent Outburst is not. So
honestly, my initial reaction is, funny enough, I think this might make Rhinos in a better position. I don't know if it's necessarily a better deck than it was with Violent Outburst, obviously, but I think all of the other contributing factors might put it in a better position than it was previously.
I'm excited to find out, and I'll probably be jamming different iterations of Rhinos over the next week to see whether it can still hang.
Yeah, so what are we doing here? Like, what if we're talking the future of Rhinos, near future of Rhinos? Like, so the biggest loss is it's very little to do with the rest of the deck, right? In terms of, you're not gonna not have a red pitch card for Fury. You do lose some green for your Force of Vigor.
Fury's gone.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, let's say, like, hypothetically. Right. Let's say it still was, like, you know, if this was another deck that could play Fury or something like that. I apologize for using the banned card. I understand it was confusing. The but
I've never been more confused in my life than I am right now.
So I mean, we add a a what is it? Generic white blue, Garden Plea, sorcery speed. You don't get the nice little plus one bonus, which is kind of, you
know, Killer Rhino, you do.
Rarely comes into place.
Yeah. Oh, you mean off the outburst. I thought you meant Exalted. Exalted.
No, off you. Yeah. Exalted does work. It does work.
Do you know that with Exalted, like, you can attack a 4/4 until Wolverines?
Do we
looked so pleased with himself.
Are we shaving on Force of Negation? Maybe having some like main deck? You know, you think you're still running the full four?
Yes.
Just because it's good, it stops hate cards, all that good stuff. It's too good not to play.
Shane, if you read the article closely, Force of Negation may have been the best card in the deck all along.
Yeah, I don't know why. I've seen some things on Twitter, people cutting forces. Please don't do that. Just play four of those.
Yeah. I mean, so like, okay, if we're fitting in Ardent Plea, it's just potentially a clean swap for Violent Outburst. And then, you know, maybe because we can, I mean, you can maybe start thinking about Solitude, maybe the sideboard. He has not that many white cards to pitch here.
Well, for me, it's almost a question of like, what are we playing red for still? Is it just for like
fire sideboard
ice? Brotherhood's just End?
And Blood Moon.
Not in the four color.
Yeah, you're not playing
Blood Moon. So the mana base for the like the four color banned version is you just play, I think it was like four Misty, four Heath, two Foothills. So your fetches are all bant, and then you just play Forest Island Plains, and then you could just have eight fetches for your basics for Blood Moon.
I mean, this seems feasible. Seems like a little bit of a reach.
It seems a little greedy. I'm just saying, like, if we're experimenting with rhinos, like maybe one of the sacred cows we can consider cutting is Fire Ice to make room for something like Teferi and Solitude.
You can bring in Dedgon, you know, as if you need interaction instead of fire. You lose the amazing tempo play of ice and like the card redraw, but maybe we don't need that as much if we're playing. You know, we do have the Surveil lands that are kind of giving us pseudo card draw. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who can say?
Yeah, honestly, with the Surveil lands, I've kind of found myself not even casting ice on two as much. Like, if I need to fix my hand, I'll just go Surveil land to Surveil land. So it's like, I haven't even really found myself utilizing ice that much anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I can see a world where Dedgon makes a bit of a comeback. I mean, depending on the metagame factors in play, right? Which is like, do we have small creatures to kill? I don't know.
How do we think the Yawgmoth matchup changes? Because Fury was really good there. And Violent Outburst was really good there. Those are two cards that I think were especially good against Yogg. And even though Yogg still has like the 2/4s problem, and Solitude is still obviously, or not Solitude, Subtlety, I think is still quite good there. I wonder if Yawgmoth maybe gets a little bit better in the matchup spread with this change, especially if Rhinos kind of has to change the speed that it's playing at moving forward.
What exactly makes Outburst good against Yawgmoth? Just like the threat of holding up the interaction?
I think so, yeah. And like being able to like sometimes surprise with 5/4s.
Sure. Because then to that end, if we have enough white cards to play Solitude, then who cares if we're tapping out for player Shardless and we have Solitude back up, it's kind of the exact same thing as holding up interaction plus Outburst, where we can just Rhinos and hold up Solitude, right?
This makes me realize that you don't only cast Violent Outburst on your opponent's end step. like you mentioned, Devin, you could do it during upkeep if you want to be super tricky with like grief. But like the amount of times that you catch someone who kind of feels priced in to like cast, you know, attacking with a Ragavan, you know what I mean? Because they're like, well, I really want this treasure token. If they block it, so be it. Or there's all kind of thing, you know, casting a cascade spell to get crashing footfalls to make some blockers has come up, you know, so many times for me. And, you know, people don't have to attack into it, but so many times they kind of have to make you have it, and then you do.
One thing I'm going to miss is when your Murktide opponent has two mana up and they go to end step fetch, and you're like, response, I got something for you. I'm going to miss that the most.
Yeah.
Sad days. I'm sorry, I feel like I slightly interrupted you, but I kind of realized that, like, you know, there's you do lose more play than just sort of like the, oh, at your end step, I'm making 10, you know, 8 power, or at your end step, I'm making, you know, 24 power with Living End or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, Devin, I like the distinction you made of maybe the deck doesn't get better per se, but maybe its positioning improves a little bit. I think the reason why the deck potentially gets worse is that it just it loses a lot of flexibility.
Sure.
And Violent Outburst like gave flexibility that we got like from Tidebinder and Lorwyn Revealed and like all the good modern cards that do three things. Like that's kind of what the format's about. And Shane still on the pod discovering that Violent Outburst can be cast at any time, even your turn if you're nasty.
Shane, cast whenever you want.
You never won with a combat Violent Outburst to just like get in an extra point or two of damage?
I don't think so. Maybe once.
Oh, you haven't lived.
I mean, that's what I keep hearing.
The best part for me was when they attack with Shieldred and you would just in combat Violent Outburst make a 5/4 trade. Oh god, that always felt so good.
Yeah,
that
was... Who's attacking such a powerful card into your open mana?
The Rakdos players.
Questionable players. Care.
You're not going to win by not attacking.
Yeah.
That's a good
point. I guess with Shieldred on the board, you sort of might, but...
Another thing that I want to mention about just kind of the deck construction and the composition is we were kind of like a Tidebinder was basically a shoe-in three or four of in the main deck in Temur and stuff. And I think Tidebinder is a card that gets... It's weird because Tidebinder gets worse in the Rhinos deck because you're playing more at sorcery speed, but Tidebinder also becomes much better against Rhinos because they're forced to play at sorcery speed. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword thing there. So I would probably like want a sideboard Tidebinder for the mirror match, but I would not want a main deck Tidebinder in this current iteration.
Interesting. Should we theorycraft of where the format goes from here and like...
Sure.
Where other decks like maybe winning or losing in this exchange.
Yeah, we can do like a winners and losers thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. I feel like this could be surprisingly brief because like Rhinos was basically pretty good against all the popular decks to very good against the popular decks, except for Living End.
And Burn.
And yeah, and Burn. It was pretty mid against Burn, right?
Oh, so, Shane, like, really quick, I have something funny to tell you. Do you want to know what the win rate of Burn is? Win rate of Burn was at Southeast Asia RC?
37%.
27.
Oh my god! How many players?
There were four.
Oh, okay.
Tough.
Well, four brave souls.
Anyways.
Yeah. So I think like. One of the headlines that have come out of today is that Yawgmoth and Titan were perhaps the biggest winners in the format.
If Rhinos is in fact worse.
Yeah. It's so much so that Sodek MTG, known Magic player, you know, they tweeted, I'm going to read this tweet because it was a little incendiary, but I'm inclined to agree. Sodek writes, at first they banned Fury, now Outburst. The balance in the top tier is broken. We can expect now that Yawgmoth and Amulet will dominate. Then they'll get nerfed. Then something else will be the new top tier. It'll get banned, etc. It'll just start with ban spiral. Beware.
First they came for the Furies. Then they came for the Outbursts.
Yeah.
And well, I said nothing.
The dive down said something. You can count on us.
Then the ban spiral occurred.
Not sure that I necessarily agree with the conclusion, but the premise is one that's been echoed a lot, that Yawgmoth and Amulet is possibly poised to like really just be the top of the metagame now.
Which is all predicated, again, on Rhinos being significantly worse and seeing a good amount less play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because if Rhinos is still good, Rhinos is good against both those decks, so.
Yeah, but what else is Rhinos keeping down? Like, what happened to Murktide? It used to be the most popular deck, then it became like a sub-50% deck. It lost a lot of that popularity, even though WotC just keeps printing cards for it because it's their favorite deck in Modern.
Funny.
Murktide was historically good against Titan.
Funny enough, I actually think that is probably the single matchup that that improves the most from the other side from the Outburst ban, because one of like a lot of people, this is kind of my gripe with the like people who are like, well, you know, I hate getting Outburst plus Force Negation. Who the heck is casting Counterspell in this format? There's like, if you look at the top decks, Footfalls, Living End, Domain, Yawgmoth, Titan, Tron, Goryeo, Scam, none of these decks play Counterspells. So it's like the only deck that actually plays Counterspells is Murktide. And that is definitely a dynamic change where, you know, a lot of times when you play against Murktide, you get Outburst, have Force backup with your Counterspell. Now you can't have that. So I think I could potentially see a slight resurgence in Murktide because of that, where the matchup dynamic changes and all that stuff. So
there is another Counterspell deck that I think could see a slight surges from here, and that's creativity. I think creativity used to have a rhino problem as well. And even though, like, rhinos will still have some sort of removal, it still has fire ice and ley line, like, I can possibly see, like, creativity getting a boost because it can be a good counterspell deck that might be able to, like, punish the sorcery speed rhino players and maybe claw back a little of the metagame that it's lost over the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, especially if some people are building their rhinos decks without force negation, because that is one of the tougher things for creativity is, like, their sorcery is so expensive that they just get... sometimes they just can't afford to play around. They just get destroyed by it. So if people are in the camp of cutting force negations, maybe relegating those to the sideboard, that can certainly help creativity a lot too.
Yeah.
What about Omnath?
Yeah, I was actually just about to bring that up. What about Omnath?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Omnath has been on the downswing since the Fury and Beans ban. I don't necessarily think that Rhino's the thing that's kind of been, like, keeping it there, per se.
I think traditionally, Omnath has kind of always been pretty good against Rhinos. I mean, they have, especially, like, you know, if they ever resolve One Ring, they can back that up with, like, the Solitudes. And once Omnath gets going, it's pretty tough to beat. So, I mean, that's definitely not a deck that I want to be on the other side of from the Rhinos thing, especially with the loss of Outburst, because that is some of the versions of Omnath are, like, more counterspell heavy. So that can, that Violent Outburst loss will definitely see, like, a significant impact in a matchup like that.
Mm-hmm. I am also curious a little bit about, like, Scales and Hammer. No one can ever seem to agree on, like, is Scales in particular good against Rhinos or not. I always thought that was the case. I think other people disagreed. If Rhinos is possibly moving away from red a little bit because it doesn't have Violent Outburst as well, and, like, maybe we're seeing fewer Flame of Anor, fewer Brotherhood's End, maybe the lone artifact decks actually have a little bit of an opening here too, especially because, like, they may be necessary to get under the Yawgmoth combo turn, and maybe same for Amulet Titan.
One thing I will kind of say about that is if the Rhinos players, the people who are building their Rhinos decks, if they're expecting more people to pick up Amulet Titan, then if everybody is, like, having a 5-alarm fire about Amulet, then those Rhinos players will want to put more forces in their sideboard. Force of Vigor, of course. And if you have more Force of Vigors, then it's going to be a tough time for Scales and Hammer time. So it might catch a little bit of splash hate from the Amulet Titan resurgence.
You know, we talk about Living End being probably dead here. Does that mean Endurance is dead? Why are we playing Endurance anymore?
True. That card's out of here. We don't need to play it.
I guess if Murktide makes a comeback.
No, I get an answer. And it's actually the deck that completely destroyed this past weekend's events, and that's Goryeo's Vengeance.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we got to be able to answer that deck.
Yes.
Can we talk and about maybe, that, by the way? That deck just destroyed everything this weekend. What the heck?
Yeah, if it weren't for the BNR, we'd be talking about it more because I started playing it and then I got distracted by the news of the day and decided not to finish my league.
You and I did. I returned the Living End cards that I had rented. It was sad.
Sad.
Like, it was fun. I was having a lot of fun playing Living End.
Sad robot. So maybe Goryeo's is just a deck to keep an eye out moving forward. It seems to be having, like, a little bit of a moment. And maybe Endurance is still relevant there. Is Endurance still good against Yawgmoth? Probably, right? Because it can disrupt their combo by a turn.
Man, I don't know. I've always been kind of 50-50 on that. Like, I tried boarding it in at some points. I've tried not boarding it at other points. It's kind of tough. It's, like, good against very specific situations and very specific cards where it's like if they Cauldron a Grist, you really want to get that out of there. So it's good against that. It can break up the Undying combo, but it feels kind of narrow. So I'm not sure.
Yeah. How do we feel about Tron moving forward? Tron's bad against Titan. I think it's probably bad against Yogg.
I think Tron might just be bad until maybe Horizons 3 gives it some better pieces with all the colorless focus, if we're lucky.
I think my issue with Tron is, as we talked about, with Yawgmoth and Amulet Titan becoming a bigger part of the metagame, if for some reason, you know, more people start adapting, like, I'm trying to think of, besides Rhinos, what other blue decks can play Subtlety. Like, I don't think Domain has enough blue cards. Murktide would probably play it, maybe Omnath. But, you know, if there's an uptick in Subtlety because of Yawgmoth and Titan, Subtlety is really good against Tron.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've also been hearing murmurs that the other dark horse moving forward is Mill. That Mill has favorable matchups against both Yogg and Titan.
That is true.
I mean, that's too... I have to admit that this conversation topic, I think is... I think people try to predict stuff, which is why we have a podcast. But I think people are looking at this...
I thought we had a podcast for the money and and the women.
And micro fame. This is not like they literally banned Crashing Footfalls. This is not like they literally banned Living End, right? So, like, I think that, I mean, they sort of maybe did ban Living End. But, like, you know, like we've been talking about, I think Crashing Footfalls might still be like a legitimate player, might still be like, let's say, 5 to 10 to, if it's still good, 15% of the meta. Maybe it still kicks butt, right? And so, like, the mental exercise of being like, well, now that, and I'm not saying you're doing this, Dan. I'm saying that everyone's doing this, right? Including myself, which is like, oh, Crashing Footfalls is 0% now with the metagame. That means that Yawgmoth and Titan are going to be like, you know, 12, 17% of the metagame. That's going to cause all these cascading factors. Cascade, ha ha ha. But I don't think that is going to happen here. Because Living End, as we saw, was pretty good. But like it was legitimate, mainly kind of like, you know, Rhino's hate, right? And Crashing Footfalls was just a really good deck against a bunch of stuff. And I think it might just rise, you know, lift the hulls, rising tide, lift all the boats in the metagame while lowering it. And that would be the case that I think WotC is going for here, right?
Did you say holes or hulls?
Hulls. Hulls.
Okay. Like I was hull confused breacher. At first.
Yeah, H-U-L-L. Okay. So I'm thinking that in the best case scenario, we are like, okay, Rhinos is back to a like 53% deck, even though we know it is based on all the data we have, more or less. But everything else is sort of also maybe like 52, 53% and that all the good decks are and everyone's happy, right? So it's like, I don't know. I don't want to like say, hey, let's stop talking about this. But like, I'm just listening to this. And I'm like, well, how can anyone possibly predict this? We can't.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to predicting things now.
Please, please. Yeah. My take is in the show.
Shane, you said something there that I was like, when you said Rhinos is just kind of good against everything. I just wish that was in the BNR announcement,
right? Like, just say that.
That would have probably
just say the matchups.
But
see, it only had one bad matchup in the top like eight decks.
Yeah,
you don't even have to get so specific. Just give us something, you know.
Yeah, it's good against a lot of stuff, except for Living End. We know this.
Is it worth talking about the lack of action elsewhere?
Like Pioneer, because you mean, or elsewhere in the format in Modern?
I guess Pioneer was my thought.
I was thinking elsewhere. Popper, but
Devin, you play a lot of Popper?
No. I haven't played a game Popper in like 7 years.
I saw a tweet from Todd Anderson, Tandy MTG, famous Lurkana player, that said, Treasure Cruise needs to be banned in Pioneer. And this has been true since the first day of the format was legal. Violent Outburst leaving Modern barely hurts Cascade. Ponder is cool and shouldn't be banned or restricted anywhere. Ban rating F. You know, we just had a Pioneer Pro Tour. Treasure Cruise wasn't the most popular deck, though not the winning deck. Do we feel like if they're doing Modern bans right now, like so far removed from the Modern season, while the Pioneer season is starting in what, a month? Like, do we feel like their curation of multiple formats may be out of step with the player base or really like what's actually happening, what's too good or what's healthy moving forward?
So I got a pretty big problem with the Pioneer section, and you know, I don't want to sound like I'm that upset. Well, I mean, I am upset, but basically, I mean, really, all they did, I'm not going to read it word for word because you know it doesn't really mean anything. But realistically, all they did was they kind of just were like, yeah, so a Pro Tour happened and people played some new cards. We talked about cards that got unbanned. That was cool. And RCQ season starts in April. That's it. That's the announcement, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The Pioneer section was really patting themselves on the back on like...
It was bonkers. It was literally like everything besides Modern was like, oh, we're so glad that cards from MKM are seeing play. It's like, yeah, I would hope so. It was bonkers.
They even refer to Soren and Imperius Bloodlord as our old friend.
Yeah, our old friend Clothis, if you remember that old chestnut, the True Heads. Yeah, it's just, it was bonkers. It seemed more tone deaf than the modern announcement, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like when you have a deck in your Pro Tour winning 57% of its matchups.
Our old friend
Phoenix, our old friend Izzet decks are still fine to play forever. Maybe we should add Preordained to Pioneer. Let's do it. How about
Ponder? They get on Banded Vintage. It should. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, as far as Pioneer is concerned, it's kind of weird. So Phoenix was the most played deck in Chicago, and it had the highest win rate among decks, I think, that had, what, 8 or more pilots, 9 or more pilots, something like that, some, you know, arbitrary number. But as far as decks that were played at a high clip, it had the highest win rate of those decks. And I mean, to like combination of highest percentage and highest win rate, typically when you have a deck that's played as much as Phoenix was, the win rate was 57%, by the way. And typically when you have a deck that is as high representation as that, there's going to be some variance along the way where you're going to have kind of like the bottom is going to level out the top, and it's going to meet somewhere in the middle. But 57% for, you know, a deck that was, what, 18% of the room or something like that, is, it's kind of absurd, to be honest with you. And that's where I don't really understand like what they think is going to change about the metagame, because even with the new cards, and I'm not trying to like, you know, I'm not trying to take away what Channel Fireball did with that Vampire deck, because that Vampire deck was absurd and it was awesome. But I mean, I think we're just going to get to a point, and maybe we already at a point where Treasure Cruise is, you know, it's just kind of a blade on the format. Personally speaking, I think it is.
And by the way, Devin, you don't have to look as far back now as Chicago. Just for evidence that Phoenix is overrepresented, there was a Pioneer Showcase Challenge just this past weekend.
Oh, was there?
Where you played in it?
No, I didn't know there was.
Yeah. So there was 278 pilots, if Goldfish is to be believed. The most popular deck, it was tied. Is it Phoenix? 59 copies. Rakdos Vampires, 59 copies. They both had 21.22%
copies of Vampires.
That's two decks taking up 43% of the metagame.
And like, you can sort of understand Rakdos just because it's new. It won the Pro Tour. It's kind of like people are exploring it. It's a breakout deck. Like, you can actually, in my mind, sort of forgive it for being as popular as it is, because perhaps it's overrepresented right now. But Phoenix has consistently been this popular, and you know, I have Phoenix in paper. I kind of like it, to be quite honest. If the threshold for banning cards in a format that is modern is this deck is too popular, it does really powerful stuff, puts players in awkward positions, these are all things that they didn't even say, but we just have to infer, like, why does that criteria not apply elsewhere? Especially if they're citing a RCQ season that's been over for months, where they're promoting the RCQ season that's coming up. Like, what better promotion could there have been than, like, we've recognized that Izzet Phoenix has been exceptionally powerful. Treasure Cruise is banned in a lot of other more powerful formats. We're going to make a correction to Pioneer now just to see what people can discover moving forward as they, you know, pick up their Pioneer cards again. Like, to quote one of my favorite George Romero movies, who's running this monkey farm?
Not us.
Yeah, man, I did not realize that Pioneer Showcase Challenge was 21% Phoenix, 21% Vampires. I'm still blown away by that. Yeah, I mean, if this is what we have to look forward to during the RSQ season, it's just, what, dual decks Phoenix versus Vampires? Is that where we're at? I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll see. And like you said, maybe it's just something where a lot of people want to play the new flashy toy. We're still only a few weeks removed from the Pro Tour. And, you know, I have noticed the metagame share. I've seen it in like a lot of challenges and league results. I've been skimming some results to see what's potentially upcoming for the RSQ season. And yeah, there's been a lot of Vampires. So,
yeah,
that's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of bloodsuckers.
Yeah, it just kind of adds fuel to the fire of sort of like, are you all... y'all playing this game?
What if they don't? What if they're only just playing Bellatro now?
Can we take a quick break? Can we come back and talk a little about Bellatro? I wasn't here last week. I have some thoughts. And look, I think this is actually really relevant for Magic players. I think this is a very Magic aligned game. Maybe we can, Stan, you did play some Goryeo's Vengeance. Do you want to talk about Goryeo's Vengeance? I mean, we're already at like an hour 15. We definitely have to save some time for Bladro.
Yeah, I'm still figuring out Goryeo's Vengeance. Like, I literally played two league matches and then the BNR happened and I was like, I can't think straight
anymore. Yeah, why bother? I know I'm not going to talk about it on tonight's episode.
Devin, you brought up Goryeo's like a few weeks ago. Is the version that's been seeing play like in the last week, is that the version that you had played?
I don't know. I'm going to look at the version that won the Southeast Asia RC, Traxa, Archaeologist, Grief, Solitude, Gristlebrand, Pending, Ephemerate, Mending, Goryeo's, Tainted Indulgence. I think it was similar, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, long story short, I'm still getting my thoughts straight on Goryeo's Vengeance. I think it's interesting. It's a very different type of interactive combo deck than what I'm used to with Cascade, but it still sort of fits that mold of, like, you're using Prismatic Ending and Grief and Solitudes to interact with opponents. There's, like, weird and different incentives on, like, what you can or should do at instant speed versus what you want to, like, do at sorcery speed. So I think it's a pretty exciting period for that deck right now, but I'll probably have more to say about it next week. Maybe we can do a little double dip into Goryeo's Cascade and whatever else is popping off between now and next Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't have a lot else to say. I said a lot already, right? I think we get to have a little bit of fun, maybe, like, messing around with some four-color Rhino stuff with Ardent Plea. Ardent Plea, by the way, was at $17 for an LP copy last I checked on TCG.
Ooh, today?
Good thing I bought those.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I'm glad I had them for old four-color Rhinos. Let's see. Yes, Ardent.
Exactly.
Ardent Plea. Type. Oh, it's a mirror. $13.99 for some HPs. If you want, you can get some LPs for $15.71. Shipping included from Kelly's Cards, 298 sales, 0%. Yeah, bonkers. So yeah, I mean, hopefully you grabbed them fast if you're a Cascade folk out there. But anyway, I mean, long story short, we'll see what happens. It should be perhaps interesting. Maybe the format will be overall slightly healthier if you consider metagame representation indication of health. Instant speed Cascade, too good for this world. I'm glad I didn't have those kitty ones and, like, get special desiccant packs that, like, uncurved them into, like, playability or something like that.
Those were expensive, too, I think.
Yeah, they were so cool, though.
Well, they had, like, the narrowest release window of all time. They were, like, only available for one MagicCon. It was, like, the MagicCon Secret Lair or something.
That sounds right. Okay. Do you all have anything else you want to say about these topics?
I think I said last week, like, I'm not buying the Guild Pact cards because it's not Modern season, and I don't feel a lot of incentive to buy Modern cards at the moment, and I just think that, we're not a finance podcast, but I just think, like, let this be a reminder that only buy the cards when you're going to play with them, because things come and go very rapidly, and I think Modern's going to have another significant shakeup this year.
Yeah.
Even if there's no BNRs, like, MH3 is going to have an impact.
I would buy nothing. In fact, I might sell. I might sell some things now.
Well, never sell.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that part.
Never sell, because then you're going to have to rebuy your Ardent Pleas. Devin, anything you want to close on?
No, I think everything was said. You know, I really do think that, you know, I said earlier that maybe Rhinos gets better. I don't know if that's necessarily true. You know, there's context, obviously, but yeah, I don't know. I think Rhinos is going to be fine. I'm sort of, I guess, for the first time in a while, excited to at least try some Modern.
Maybe. Yeah, are you going to be streaming some new Rhinos tomorrow?
Maybe. I'm not sure yet.
My
standard streams have been doing really well, so.
Well, lean into what does well, my friend. I'm not even going to take a break. If you want to turn the podcast off right now, feel free. I want to talk to my friends about Bellatro, because I finally figured this game out, at least part of this game. I figured out the early game. And I think one thing that we didn't talk about, you all didn't mention last week, and I think it's probably because we all were still figuring out what this game actually was, is that this game to me is drafting archetypes. Right? Like, this is a game of figuring out what the game is giving to you, keeping yourself open. Like, this my friend who's pretty good at this game. He was like, yeah, stay open with this pick. And I was like, what? This is drafting. You're right.
So we're about to talk about this other game for our wind down that we've been really digging lately. I would love to hear from our listeners. Do you like it when we like do this, when we talk about another game for like 10 to 20 minutes? If you do, we'll do it from time to time as things that we're passionate about comes up. But if you absolutely hate it and you're just, this is when you're going to turn off the show, like, let us know that too. Shane, go off, King.
Okay, perfect. So yeah, I mean, it's basically drafting something, but you're just playing it. You're not playing against like other people. You know, you don't have to worry about cards wheeling, but it's really, you do have to play against a hugely varied card pool. Some of which are common, some of which are uncommon, some of which are rare. You kind of learn the meta of the game, like what cards are potentially worth even thinking about early on. What's good early? What's good late? What's an early pick in Balatro versus like what's a late pick? What's like a synergy pick? And this is the kind of stuff that has been really fun to figure out, where I'm like, oh, I know I'm going for a single hand strategy. Like I'm going to win off of four of a kinds. Even thinking like, what's your end game strategy? Is building up four of a kind to like big enough to like win the at the end, have enough points. So I'm going to focus, like I know that I'm going to want like the telescope card, because telescope then lets me always pick the hand from the planets, like, so there's like planet packs and you open them, and inside the planet packs are very mostly different hands that you upgrade. So like, let's say I'm going to go for four of a kinds. And then if I get the telescope, then I know I'm always going to get four of a kind out of my celestial packs. And like, you just sort of lean into like your archetype or your strategy. And if it comes together, that's cool. Like getting good is going to be figuring out how to win when it's not handed to you on a platter, like my first win was, which was absurd.
And I think that the draft comparison is so perfect because, you know, you think about if you open a pack and you open, let's say, I don't know, like some busted white rare or whatever, and you kind of keep drafting and white's not open, you know, you're kind of like, well, you can't be married to your first pick. And it's similar here where it's like, if you get like, you know, you're very early on and you get like one of the powerful jokers that is, let's say like it's, you know, benefits you for getting flushes. You don't necessarily want to go into that early because, you know, you kind of want to let the packs dictate how you will go on. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I think some of the most powerful things I've found early on, and I'm not saying this as an expert. I'm saying this to like prompt your response. Is like, I like a lot of the stuff that gives you more things to pick from. Whether it's like the Joker that gives you more Jokers, like early on, that's great. It's like feeding you free Jokers and you keep the ones that are good and you sell the ones that are not so good. Like, I love the Joker that gives you a proc for getting a tarot card when you open a pack.
That one's so good.
You just get tons of tarot cards being fed to you, and you get to pick and like use those tarot cards to manipulate your deck, like, you know, removing cards from your deck via the tarot cards, duplicating cards in your deck via the tarot cards, all hugely powerful options. And the more of those you get for free, it's both an economic benefit because you don't have to pay for them, and it's just a selection benefit. And so those are the things that keep you open too, right? Like you said, Devin, is like, I'm not marrying myself to any particular strategy. I'm going to see what the game feeds me, and I'm just increasing the volume of what it's feeding me to like be able to select from it. And I find those things quite powerful. And then you sort of start narrowing down your focus into, okay, this card, this Joker is good for my full house strategy. This card is good for my straight strategy. This card is good for my flush strategy. Or I want to get rid of these, you know, actual cards in my deck because they're not in the suit that I'm trying to force my flushes into. And I have found I've actually had a pretty good win rate since I figured this out. Like, I might be at like 50%, but I've only like won three times. I mean, so maybe more like 40%, right? But like, I know that's going to start getting harder and harder as I experiment with more of the different deck, like the card decks that have different rule sets around them. There are challenge modes where you can like increase the difficulty of what you're doing in the game. And I'm curious what you have found to be kind of like interesting early strategies for our listeners if they're going to get into the game, like cards you think are good or strategies you think are good or things that you're looking for in your early plays.
I'm a really big fan of high card. I tried a couple of high card runs, and the most important thing about high card runs is the stone card, which is it's no rank or no suit, but it gives you plus 50 chips.
You mentioned this last week, and I didn't understand. Like, did you have to get a Joker that let you score those?
No. So what happens with stone cards is like, okay, so let's say, you know, you get to a point where your deck is just, you have like, you can add stone cards and copy and swap, and you have like 20 stone cards, whatever. If you play a hand that's five stone cards, right? If you just play five stone cards, there's no rank and no suit. That counts as a high card hand. But you don't need a joker. Each of those stone cards will score, even though it's a five card hand. It'll score. Yeah, it'll still score.
Oh, I didn't know that. It sees it as one card?
Yes. But it'll score all five. And that's what's so busted is like what you end up doing is you end up getting like the most important are the stone cards. You have steel cards that you keep in your hand to get the multipliers. And then you have stuff that re-triggers the stone cards and re-triggers the steel cards. So it's like, you know, you play five stone cards. Each of those is plus 50 chips. If you're re-triggering those plus the stone cards, then it just gets completely out of control.
That sounds really cool. That does make me think about the power of those cards you have to keep in your hand is like another thing that I think is pretty easy to underestimate by people where they're like, well, if I have to keep this in my hand, that means I'm not playing it. That sounds not good. But you definitely get to a point where like those cards in your hand are doing just as much as your jokers on top. Like they're adding to your multiplier. They're adding to your value. They're giving you free tarot cards. You know, they're giving you money when you keep them in your hand. And so like definitely look for the opportunity to even add to your deck just because like then if you don't play them, then you're getting a good benefit out of them.
I actually read that the high card strategy is one of the most consistent strategies according to someone's guide on Reddit who claimed to do very well with the game. And it, other than you, like that's the only time I've ever seen someone like mention, like try to build a deck that like supports just high cards, which is interesting because like on the one hand, the high card play is the one you can make every turn. Like you can always just play the highest card in your hand and then let your jokers and whatever buffs you've drafted along the way kind of do the rest of the work. But it's also like, to me, it's almost the least intuitive one. Like I always try to approach it from the perspective of either go all in on like a style of hand, as Shane said, like for him, it's four of a kind. Like I really like the joker that lets you play straights and flushes with only four cards, or the joker that lets you skip cards.
Oh yeah, those are quite good.
Smeared is broken too. The one that counts diamonds as hearts and clubs as spades. That one is so good.
Yeah. Yeah. And like just finding like synergies with a handful of jokers that just like basically go off and along the way, like just planeting up as many different hands as possible, but paying attention to your tracker of like what your most played hands are too, so that you can like make informed choices on which planet cards you're going for. But the thing I've discovered since last week, and since last week I've won twice over like probably like at least 20 drafts, if we're being really honest.
It's hard. It's a hard game.
It's so fun, but it is a challenging one. In my wins, both wins were very different with very different strategies, and they were both just a product of like experimenting with new cards that I haven't played with before and like trying build around strategies. The thing that I just find is like there's so many different ways to approach the game that certain strategies might suit you better than others. And as the more you play, the more stuff you unlock and the more deep you go into what Bellatro can offer you, like the more you might discover is actually a winning strategy that might catch you by surprise.
Yeah. I think that's the longevity of the game because right now, like I think the 101 is what I've figured out and what I've done, which is like, you know, you figure out a hand that the game is telling you to build towards. You modify your deck to make that hand come up more frequently. Like my four of a kind wins had like 15 and 12 aces, you know, in them. Do you know what I mean? Like this oodles of aces. And so all I was doing, it was super boring in the end, which is like, I am throwing away cards till I have four aces. And then I'm scoring like 120,000 points, which is like enough to beat the final boss. Right. And that's really good. But like, you know, if that's all the game was, which is like find the hand and then hopefully you get the scoring cards that then make that enough. I don't think that would be a deep enough game to be that interesting. But what I think it's doing smartly and intelligently, which are the same words, is drip feeding you more options, which is like, now you have the yellow deck. Now you have the green deck. Now you have the black deck. Now you have this modification to this deck and you can like, you increase the difficulty sort of granularly as the game is also increasing the modifications that it is offering you. And frequently it's based off of stuff you did in the previous run where it's like, hey, you never played a three of a kind. Now you're going to get the three of a kind Joker, you moron. Like you're going to, yes. You better start playing some three of a kinds because the game now is going to offer this to you. So like learn how to do something else. You're not going to win off four of a kind the entire time because now you have this other Joker in the mix. And I think that's like really intelligent. And I think it's going to give the game longevity for people who are like, well, you know, like literally my first two runs were like identical four of a kind wins, which is just like telescope, celestial packs, four of a kind, get supporting Jokers, get some cool cards in my hand that beef stuff up some more, and then go to town. And then the third one was not that much different. And that was just a flush run. And it was, you know, nothing special. But like I can already tell based off of what the game is sort of telling me it's unlocking that like that is not a sustainable strategy. And it's also kind of like it's not going to win the more challenging setups that the game can present to you.
You know who else likes this game and posted a review on Steam?
Go ahead.
Devin, do you know who I'm about to say?
No.
One Dr. Richard Garfield.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Posted a very positive review after playing for 37.2 hours, called it a fresh deck building roguelike. The sort of thinking you will find yourself doing is very different than others in this category. There's an immense amount of variety and content. After posting that review, he went on to play another 100 hours of the game. So the screenshot I'm looking at,
my man, Dr. Richard Garfield,
has him playing 137 hours on record, and for all we know, he's probably played even more since then.
Wow, you love to see it.
So there. That's why.
That's some high praise.
Seriously, yeah. That's to me, it's almost like that's one of the reasons why I think it's kind of fun to talk about it on the Dive Down. Is like there's something about this drafting card game that I think appeals to us as Magic players, and I can see it like growing in popularity over time, similar in the way Slayless Spire did,
yeah.
Because it scratches an itch that you can do via single player that makes you feel like smart for making really good choices and like encourages you to keep going even after you've lost. That like I think that's one of the many reasons why we love Magic, and to see that captured in this like single player video game that's just like building on the essential foundation of poker in a fresh way. Like maybe we should just do the Bellatro spinoff and really lean in.
Well, what I was gonna say was like I don't think we're gonna talk about this every week, especially as like the initial like hype is like sort of dying down for ourselves too, but like I would not be surprised for us to be like, yo, let's talk where we are in Bellatro. What are you doing lately? What's cool? Like what
it's a good refresher.
How many cool wins lately that we want to talk about? So yeah, but if you hate this, let us know.
My first win was actually not with the red deck, but with the blue deck. So the red deck is you get an extra discard every turn. The blue deck is you get an extra hand every turn.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
That I liked having the extra hand every turn because you can possibly generate more money. And also you just have like more opportunities to fail.
Well,
that's where I was going with it.
Well, what I like is that then your hands become your discards, right? Because you can do more throwaway cards, like, and but you can also like potentially also have like a backup hand that like is like buffering your points, but not necessarily like your main win con. And like I really like even something as simple as that, where it's like, oh, I have fewer discards but more hands. That means I can play some off hands to then redraw those cards, and they're effectively they're point scoring discards.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And if you're getting the extra hand bonus, it doesn't even feel like you're losing that extra hand because you've got your plus one anyways, you know?
And then there's like fun synergies too, where it's like there's Jokers that score like triple multiplier for your last hand. So like you can do like a lot of like throwaway stuff and then just like go ham on your last hand that you've been setting up the whole time.
I think it was the first run that I won was a money draft where early on I got this Joker that gives you twice the amount of chips for how much money you have. So then I was just incentivized to hoard as much money as possible, maximize interest. And like after every run, I would just have over $100.
Oh my gosh.
So like my chip count kept growing with every hand I played, and then I had like additional multipliers on top of that. So like there's just so many different strategies, and the deck you play incentivizes you to try new strategies along the way as well. Like,
so, yeah. Play Balatro, so, baby.
Play Balatro. God, if only we could get a promo
code. Yeah, sponsor our podcast. Anyway.
I'm watching a clip of somebody who is on Anti 47, and they scored 1.9 quintillion.
Oh, yeah. And after you finish it, which I think, honestly, is not super hard, like, early on, I think you can pull it off. Like, you can keep going, and, like, sort of, like, you can play endless mode, which gets very hard very fast.
Very hard very fast.
Anyway. You guys want to get out of here?
And I think that wraps up this week's show. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you get the latest episodes as soon as they come out. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. If you'd like to submit a question to the podcast or just reach out in general, you can tweet us at TheDiveDown, all one word, or email thedivedown@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/TheDiveDown. You can check out our store at thedivedown.com/store. You can also support Devin via his stream on Twitch, twitch.com/doomwake. Doom is spelled with zeros. I'm sure Devin has some promo codes as well, but you're going to have to go to the Twitch to find those. You can head over to Heavy Play to get some incredible deck boxes and dice boxes and playmats featuring the Equip Mag system. Use promo code thedivedown2024 for 10% off your first order at heavyplay.com. And of course, shout out to ManaTraders for sponsoring the Dive Down. With all these bans, all these changes, this podcast would not be possible without ManaTraders for us to try new stuff every week. And you can too if you sign up for ManaTraders using promo code thedivedown_oof. That's spelled O-U-F, all one word. Gets you 10% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. As always, special thanks to the bands Nowhere in Space Blood for letting us use their music. And until next week, get out there and find a way to cascade!